The following Dharma discourse was given by Jeffrey Shugen Arnold at Zen Mountain Monastery. Shugen Roshi is the head of the Mountains and Rivers Order and abbot of the monastery. This talk, like all of our talks, is offered free of charge. If you would like to make a donation or find out more about our various programs, visit us online at zmn.org. Thank you for listening.
Master Dogen's teaching on continuous practice, part one. On the great road of Buddha ancestors, there is always unsurpassable practice, continuous and sustained. It forms the circle of the way and is never cut off. Between aspiration, practice, enlightenment, and nirvana, there's not a moment's gap. Continuous practice is the circle of the way. This being so, continuous practice is undivided. It's not forced by you or others. The power of this continuous practice confirms you as well as others. It means your practice affects the entire earth and the entire sky in the 10 directions. Although not noticed by others or by yourself, it is so. Opening to one of two of Dogen's fascicles on continuous practice, both of them rather lengthy. He wrote these in 1243, so he was 43 years old. And as from what I could read, they seemed like they were some months apart. So he finished the first one, and then some months later came out with the second part, which I won't deal with this week. But I wanted to, in these few talks this week, draw from this fascicle. And I won't be doing the whole fascicle. And I'm also pulling some excerpts out of sequence. Just so if you go looking in the fascicle, it's not all going to line up exactly. Constancy is one of the virtues of a bodhisattva. What is constancy? What is continuous practice? You know, one of the many, many important things about Sesshin. There's so much within such a simple palette. There's so much that takes place during Sesshin. Much of it not noticed, which perhaps is just as well. Keep things simple. But are happening nonetheless, and are an important part of what, and really an essential part of what Sesshin is. And one of the things that's happening is that in everyday practice, most people who practice steadily sit some period of time each day, and that's the normal thing. We do the same thing here in monastic training. And particularly if it's a shorter period of time, then what tends to happen is the person's meditation begins, develops, and ends in somewhat similar fashion day after day. You know, there are fluctuations in terms of what's going on outside and inside and highs and lows, but there's a kind of steady regularity to a student's experience, which is natural. And part of what happens there is the repetitiveness of that can unconsciously set up a sense of this is what Zazen is, or this is what Zazen is at home or in my daily practice. This is the beginning, this is the end, this is as far as it goes, this is what my concentration is. And we build up kind of unconscious boundaries, limits, expectations even. And so we go to our cushion expecting, maybe having high hopes, but sort of expecting what happened yesterday and the day before to be more or less what happens today, and voila, so it is. And so in that way, we can be establishing a kind of habit that begins really in the mind with what we think is going to happen, and then we, to a certain degree, confirm that. And of course, you know, this is not a fixed thing. But one of the reasons that intensive practice, periods of intensive practice, is so important is that you go beyond that in pretty much every way, in terms of the amount of sitting we're doing, in terms of the intensity, in terms of the continuity, in terms of the experience of it. And in that way, whatever those sort of repetitive experiences are, those kind of unconscious limits, or conscious even, break apart. They sort of fall away, and we step into a deeper state of mindfulness, of concentration. We're sitting longer than we do normally, and so we realize we can do that. We have the capacity to do that. We're sustaining our zazen and our concentration beyond what we would normally do at home. And so we realize, oh, we can do that. And in that, it deepens, it develops, it opens up, it becomes more pliant, there's more constancy. And then when we return to more everyday practice, something is different. And that sense of our capacity is different, which is very important. It's one of the reasons aspiration is so important, is because it's bringing a larger view, a larger possibility, in a sense, a larger self, a larger practitioner into our mind and then into our experience. So this teaching by Master Dogen on continuous practice, there are many there are some teachings that are just instructional. But many teachings function on two levels. We can look at them in terms of the two truths. So there's a sort of a relative level, a practice instruction. How do I employ this teaching in my actual practice, in my meditation, in what I'm doing off the cushion? And then the other aspect of that teaching is that it is speaking from that actualized, enlightened mind. So one is, how do I practice this great road? And the other is, having realized the great road, how is it? And so I spoke about this when we were studying the faith mind during Ango in the spring. And so to sort of hear Dogen's words in that way, so to think of him as, or to hear him as speaking from within. He's speaking from within that circle of the way, from within this place of unsurpassable practice that is continuous. The great road. So we're walking the path of the Buddha. So there have been 2,500 years of continuous practice. And to think of all the manner of times and places and societies and history, things that were happening at all the different times in every generation, right? Because every generation lives at a particular time. And the practice was taking place in the forest, in small communities and large communities and monasteries and small temples. People were sitting in all kinds of internal states, but also all kinds of external states. States of relative peace and calm, and states of profound upheaval, uncertainty, suffering. It's always been true. And that for every practitioner, there's a point at which we decide not to accept what it seems like we are being expected to accept. That there is what may be just a shadow, a glimmer of an awareness of not resigning oneself to the way things seem to be, the way it seems things just are. That we don't need to accept that life is just pain and suffering and confusion and hatred and greed, with some joy and love and pleasure and satisfaction thrown in to the mix. But that underneath there is what the Buddha said, there's this deep undercurrent, undertow of dukkha. And so having not accepted that life of resignation, the question then becomes, what is your yes? What is that sense of what is possible? What are you seeking to find that is a yes? It's easy to say no. It's easy to say this just doesn't work. This is messed up. That can just become another place to dwell. And so all the Buddha ancestors since the beginning have walked that road and have called back over their shoulder and said, come along, you too. There is a great road, the way that pervades space and time, that is your Buddha nature. From the point of view of enlightenment, the question is having had that glimmer of aspiration, of awakening, why would you not endeavor to practice and realize it? Why would anyone turn their back on that and resign themselves again? Of course, there are many, many reasons to choose samsara. We could each make out a what would necessarily be an incomplete list of all of our reasons for choosing samsara at different points. And as practitioners, what's important is to see those moments when we're actually choosing to take refuge in or have faith in our attachments, our false views, in those moments when we do, to really see that, to not be afraid to see that, to know that that is the choice that we're making. Don't underestimate the value or the power of that. So once having begun, once entering this Buddha field of unsurpassable practice, continuous and sustained, now what? Dogen says it forms the circle of the way. It's never cut off. There's not a moment's gap. It's not near, it's not far. Even within the depths of our delusion, in the darkest night, we are not one hair distant. Although it may seem thousands of miles away, it is a circle of the way and is never cut off. In that way, we never fall out of favor with the Dharma, to think of it that way. The Dharma never gets tired of you, right? Weary of our machinations. It completely understands all of it, utterly. This circle of the way embraces, encompasses, surrounds, it permeates. It is not anything else. And what Dogen is saying is that when we begin to be aware that we have entered into something that has been going on all along, all the time. It doesn't just begin now. But now we begin to see. And the circle of the way can sometimes seem like that circle of samsara. We seem to find our way back at some very familiar place. Oh, I thought I had taken care of this. Every time a student comes in Doksan and begins a sentence with, I am still, right? There's the secret expectation that one day I won't say that anymore. I have utterly, forever, finally, unequivocally vanquished whatever the rest of that sentence was. And that's just that mode of thinking we have to free ourselves of. Daroshi used to speak about the path as a spiral. It seems like we circle back around to a very familiar place, but it's a spiral, which means it's always moving forward. So there's something familiar, old habits, familiar reactions, but it's not the same. And just from a logical perspective, it can't be. Nothing is permanent. We never stand in the same place. Of course, we can't always see the progress we're making. In fact, most of the time, we don't see it. I mean, if you think about the moments when you recognize, when you're aware that things are shifting, that something is developing, right? Those moments tend to stand large in our mind because they encourage us. But then if you think of all of the moments in between where you're just practicing, right? And you're not aware of change. And so much of the time, as Dogen says, although it may not be noticed by yourself or others, it is so. There is a road which is opening. It's always there, but when we practice, now we're actually moving along that road in the direction, we might say, of realization, enlightenment. But that sense of gap between aspiration, practice, enlightenment, and nirvana, there's not a moment's gap. And how important it is that he say that, because, of course, we think of, he says them in exactly the sequence we expect them to take place. First, there's bodhicitta, there's aspiration, then there's seeking, then there's finding the Dharma, then there's practicing, then there's enlightenment, then there's nirvana. And he says, in this there is not a moment's gap. It is continuous practice. So the sense that that gap is real and broad when we experience it, that we're stagnant, that nothing is happening, that we're not good at this, I remember the last couple of years of my mom's life, I was talking to her one day, and we were just talking about stuff. And somehow meditation came up. And she says, you know, I'm just no good at that. And I said, Mom, that's what everybody says. So that sense of gap is really just the face of our karma. It's how it appears to us. It's an old habit-based thought world that we create and live in. And it casts each of us, you, in your case, as the main star, right? Oh, good. As the main character in a play, unfortunately, there's no rest, no day off. It's always in production. It's always on stage. And this play, we sort of vacillate between encores and Rotten Tomatoes. And you're only as good as your last review. So it's kind of merciless. Kind of exhausting. But this continuous practice, Dogen says, is undivided. It's not forced by you or others. Moreover, the power of this continuous practice confirms you as well as others. This means your practice affects the entire earth and the entire sky in the 10 directions. It cannot be taken by force. What an incredible medicine for our time, in which it seems everything is to be taken by force. And taken away, because they have to go together. When something is taken by force, it has to be lost by force as well, and it will be. And thus, the ever state, never-ending state of vigilance. It cannot be taken by force. That means we will not ever accomplish the way. We will never find true peace through aggression. There is no war to end all wars. Sometimes, yes, there has to be great effort, a ferocious intention, an unwavering sincerity. And sometimes there's relaxed ease, effortless non-doing, naturalness. And over time, those merge more and more as an aspect, an expression of continuous practice. Along the way, those are sort of described, those highs and lows. The periods of struggle and effort and difficulty, and then where something opens up, things break apart, there's ease, it's effortless, and all of it's impermanent. None of it lasts, because that's its nature. And so if we think of this within our practice of Zazen, our walking, our working, our chanting, our prostrations, our eating, that in each of those practices, those essential practices, they go back to the Buddha, that the practice, the mind, the heart, the intention, the fruit, cannot be a matter of control or aggression or force. And so then how do we apply effort? How do we be effortful when we need to be? How do we be firm when we need to be without that force? That's very difficult in the beginning and for a while. It's difficult as long as it is difficult. There's no particular timetable set on this. And it's also, of course, not constant. It's not that it's always difficult. But that's such an easy, familiar modality. You know, between that forcefulness, that striving, and then just, bah, being passive. To be in accord means that the whole body and mind is naturally so, just as all things are. So with all of this effort, we're really within our mind, because everything else is already in place, within our mind, within our emotions, within the kleshas, within all of the disturbances that arise, it convinces us that we are somehow distant. That really we're just coming into, in our mind, into accord with self-nature. And in that we meet everything else there, which is already there. The party's already begun. Everyone's invited. And so in holding on, when we hold on, when we take refuge or seek out, or return to or choose our samsaric tendencies. It's so important to continue to practice, and I don't mean just letting go, but to continue to be mindful and watch what happens. Cause and effect. To see the tension, the pain, the anxiety, the embodiment, the distraction, the display, how it comes out. And then similarly, when we let go, when what at times seems like we're moving against the grain, we're doing something that seems very counterintuitive, we're entering into, relaxing into, accepting, not judging, that which seems so clearly in need of judgment. And to see there, to be mindful there of the consequence. What is bound becomes unbound. What was confused becomes more straight ahead. The dis-ease becomes more at ease. And then as we look closer, we see nothing is actually becoming something. Dogen says, this power of continuous practice confirms you, it confirms the teachings, the Dharma, it confirms practice, the path, self-nature, It confirms samsara. It confirms faith. It is all confirming of enlightenment as well as delusion. Confirming in the sense of seeing clearly. In the Mountains and Rivers Sutra, Dogen said, when sages and wise ones live in the mountains, because the mountains belong to them, trees and rocks flourish and abound, and the birds and beasts take on a supernatural excellence. This is because the sages and wise ones have covered them with virtue. And we should realize that the mountains actually take delight in wise ones and sages. It means your practice affects the entire earth and the entire sky in the 10 directions. That the whole world takes delight in our being in accord. In the same way that the world groans and cracks in the presence of our delusion. And when it's not noticed, we, up to a point, can believe that to mean that there is nothing there. If we don't see it now, then nothing's happening. There is nothing other than what I can see, what I can measure. But if we really believe that, I think if a person really believed that, they would not last very long at all. There has to be some faith that hopefully we've sort of developed prior to entering into practice, just having engaged in things in which you have to work, be diligent and steady and put in the time and effort when there isn't a lot of yield. I mean, study almost anything, and there will be periods where you're putting all of the effort in and it doesn't seem there's a lot going on. And that's part of, isn't that part of our growing up, our maturity, our learning how to actually leap, is to not despair in those moments when we don't notice and know that there is something that is so, nonetheless. Dogen says, accordingly, by the continuous practice of all Buddhas and ancestors, your practice is actualized and your great road opens up. By your continuous practice, the practice of all Buddhas is actualized and the great road of all Buddhas opens up. Your practice, continuous practice, creates the circle of the way. And by this practice, Buddha ancestors abide as Buddha, non-abide as Buddha, have Buddha mind, and attain Buddha without cutting off. And so the teachings speak of having faith, listening to the teachings, reflecting on them, which means really engaging them, right? Trying to understand in our mind, what are they saying? How could this be so? How do I begin to understand this? Selflessness, emptiness, dukkha, attachment, kleshas, the skandhas. These kind of very sophisticated, highly developed teachings on the most profound matters about being a human being. And so to engage, to reflect, to develop faith, and then all of that comes pouring into your practice. Right? All of that is there then when you practice. Not putting it in front of you, but it doesn't need to be in front of you. It's there inside of you. And it gives you confidence. It gives you strength. It gives you energy. And so then we begin to see that continuous practice affirmed, the self confirmed. The great road of all Buddhas opens up, and you are invited to enter. We are each invited to come in. We see that we were always invited. In fact, you don't actually need an invitation. It's nice to be greeted at the door, right? Come in. Here's your seat. How wonderful. You were expecting me. Yes, we were expecting you. But it's not necessary. We see we're always standing in the room in the company of Buddhas. And now, as time goes on more and more, you can appear as a Buddha, you can appear as a non-Buddha, you can have Buddha mind, you can attain Buddha without cutting off. In other words, you are free to appear however is needed. Like the great Kanon Bodhisattva, hearing the cries, manifesting enlightenment, manifesting delusion. Right? Being at rest, because now that vote, that body that was always in session to vote on whether you are unworthy or worthy, has been canceled permanently. Everybody's been sent home. An incorrect question, the Buddha might have said. And because of this practice, there is the sun, the moon, and the stars. Because of this practice, there's the great earth and the open sky. There's the body and mind and all of your environment. Because of this practice, there are four great elements in the skandhas. Right? How can it be that your practice affects the whole earth and the whole sky? Well, what do you call the whole earth and the great sky? What do you call your body and mind and your environment? What do you call the four elements in the five skandhas? That question will take you right in. We don't realize how powerful mind is, how it is the power in this human life to create the sun and moon and stars, the earth and sky, this body and mind, your particular environment. And not in the sense that nothing utterly exists, you open your eyes and poof, it all comes into existence. That's not what it's saying. It's much more profound than that. It's much more real than that. The three worlds are mind. That too will take you right in. We're actually seeing the evidence of that. I mean, if we just are practicing mindfulness and are aware of what's happening moment to moment, inwardly and outwardly, and how within one day, seasons come and go. The sky darkens and then becomes clear. Mountains, impassable, unpassable mountains appear, and then suddenly there's a road. And that while it's clear that it's mind, that when we open our eyes, we see the world agreeing. And even within the suffering and the force, the control, the domination, the insanity, the ridiculousness that samsara takes the form of so often, and the unimaginable pain that it causes. That too is changed. that world, this world. It's there, but it's not the same. The pain, in a certain sense, is greater. Because now we see it does not have to be this way for anyone. Dogen says, continuous practice is not necessarily something people in the world love, but it should be the true place of return for everyone. It's because of practice that we can see and hear and taste and touch and think and act without force, without aggression, without creating suffering, without adding more confusion to this world. And all the while, it's not necessarily something that people in the world love. Well, that's clear. You don't have to look far to see that. But it should be and already is the true place of return for everyone, Buddhist or non-Buddhist. There is only one place to return to. And the power of the path of the Buddha Dharma, which is your mind, is that you don't need to love practice in order to practice. Isn't that wonderful? I mean, think about that. In fact, some of the most important practice you will ever do happens in those moments when you are decidedly not in love with it. Not just now, check with me later. And why? Why is that so powerful? Because now you don't have to be bound by feelings and emotions in order to practice. You don't have to be bound by anything. And in that, your body, your mind, your environment is not the same. Otherwise, we have to wait. Right? We have to wait for things to change. We have to wait to be in the right mood or have the right energy or not be so upset, or the list is long. And waiting just breeds more waiting. All along, we're in the place of our true return. And so what that means is that we, each of us, has the power to decide where to direct our mind at this very moment. And that is never, it's influenced, but it's never limited by what's going on, inwardly or outwardly. We have that power. That's what the power that you're developing on that diamond seat, to direct your mind to where it needs to be. And very importantly, to know what that place is. Because it's not always the place you desire. So if a strong emotion is coming up and you would rather direct your attention to your breath because you don't really want to sit with that emotion, that is not exercising that power well. Time swiftly passes by and opportunity is lost. The right conditions are now. And that's why it's really important that the conditions during practice, even here where we can create an environment just for this, that the conditions be varied. Right? And it doesn't really, you don't have to do much to vary the conditions for each person. Right? Just create a space, show up, they start to change. Because those conditions are within us. And therein we learn how to open the great circle of the way in continuous practice. Not to wait. Not to put it off. And that's really where we cultivate our compassion. Where we are humbled and shown how difficult the mind can be, how entrenched, how intractable it can be, and then something opens up. We can see how utterly convincing our thoughts can be, our views about ourselves, our judgments, and then we see them pass away and we feel confident or just okay. And seeing that within ourselves, we realize that exists in every single person. No place is fixed. No mind, no state, no emotion, no view. That possibility is always there. And so then we can be very present to and empathetic to and desiring to be a benefit in the presence of someone's intractable state, but not be seduced by that. And so Dogen says, to forsake name and gain in this lifetime and practice one thing thoroughly is the vast continuous practice of the Buddha's timeless life. This continuous practice is bound to be sustained by continuous practice. Therefore, love and respect your body, mind, and self that are engaged in this continuous practice. We should really hear his words. There are many teachings that point to how the importance, the sort of supreme importance of one moment, of one thing thoroughly practiced, and how that is more important, more powerful than offerings of incense or prostrations or invocations or circumambulations, devotions. Unless those very things are practiced as one thing thoroughly. Because in that one moment of one thing thoroughly practiced, the vast continuous practice of the Buddha's timeless life is sustained. That road, that great road is opened up. We see that self, the deluded self, the enlightened self, the mind, all things confirmed in their essential state. We realize nothing needs to be taken by force or otherwise. In a sense, we just need to allow, to return, to this. And so Dogen says, love and respect your body and mind and self that are engaged in this continuous practice. That is your basic compassion, to love and respect this body and mind and self that is engaged in this practice. Right? Appreciate that. Appreciate yourself for that. Go on and congratulate yourself. Don't be shy. For engaging in this path with what is really the essential work, how to be in this life together. Let's have Dogen say the last word. The moon reflected in a mind clear as still water. The moon reflected in a mind clear as still water. Even the waves breaking are reflecting its light. There is nothing outside of this road, which means there is nothing that is not part of this practice, which means there is nothing that is not auspicious in its capacity to reveal.
Thanks so much for listening. For meditation supplies such as meditation cushions, incense, malas, liturgical instruments, books, and more, visit the Monastery Store at monasterystore.org. Support for your spiritual practice at home.